Let's bring in Sam Constantino into the conversation, courtesy of Sportsnet. Sam, always a pleasure chatting with you. How are you on this Monday morning?
Yeah, doing great, thanks. Just trying to decompress a little bit from a couple of busy days there in Buffalo, but a couple of really good days for sure.
Well, yeah, and you have an article out, your 10 NHL Draft Combine Takeaways on Sportsnet.ca, a great read. And we were talking about Philip Broberg, who I've heard, Sam, the Canucks do find interesting. I'm not sure that he's their top defenseman at 10, but I've also heard Edmonton likes him. And you mentioned in your write-up that he impressed quite a bit at the Combine.
Sure did. Loved the way he just carried himself like a man. He walked in perfectly well, dressed, head held high, good firm handshake, looked you in the eye. So whenever you're thinking about first impressions, he is probably one of the three guys that made a very first and lasting impression on me. And that's just, you know, from the personal side. Of course, the hockey side is, you know, is what weighs heaviest. And I think the bookends to his season were absolutely brilliant. And I think he's worked himself back into the conversation of a top 10, where for a good chunk of the year, based on him, you know, being moved up and down and all around, he was more kind of a middle of the pack guy for me.
Yeah, and one of the things we talked a lot about was, sure, Byram's the one defenseman that looks like a top five pick, but generally there is a defenseman or two that kind of rises up when you get closer and closer to the draft. Now we're less than 3 weeks away. Could we see a couple of defensemen outside of Byram potentially go in that top 10? Because Moritz Seider is another guy that is turning some heads.
Yeah, no doubt. And Seider for really good reason, too. Without a doubt, the best interview of any. And it was really quite funny because I was talking to Alex Turcotte just kind of underneath there. And Seider walked by and he kind of flexed his calf muscle. And he said to Turcotte, he goes, "Ah, nice calves, eh?" And it was a bit of a running joke because he's really not, he's not all that. He's not a big, thick dude. He's not a guy who you'd say, "Oh, he's ripped. Look at his calves." He's not that type of guy. And, you know, I thought for a second, because I didn't really hear his accent, that he was part of the U.S. program team and a guy that I wasn't familiar with his face. And as I found out later, about an hour later, it was Seider. And in fact, because of that little quip, I made it a point to pull him aside and talk to him. And both Louis DeBrusque and I pulled him aside. And I got to tell you, we'd probably laugh for 10 minutes straight. But it's nice. An unbelievable story, and really, really super impressed with that guy, and I couldn't agree more. I think he, Seider, Soderstrom are going to be kind of the next wave of guys that come off the board. And as you know, defensemen have that extra value to them. I think there's a pretty good race between those three guys for the next guy off the board in terms of defensemen.
You mentioned Broberg was one of three guys that really impressed you. Is that the list that you just provided us, the other two guys who also impressed you similarly?
Yeah, for sure. I thought Seider was unbelievable. Like, so you have him, Broberg. You know, obviously there was a big list of guys for me. I was really lucky, guys, that our producers at Sportsnet were able to manage a sit-down with the four U.S. foreign players in the U.S. program and the four WHL guys. So, you know, to narrow it down to three is probably a little bit of a reach, because I love those sit-downs. We spent about 20 minutes with each of those groups of four, and I really, really enjoyed the conversation and really appreciate those young men, as busy as they were over that week, allowing us the time to do that. And those are features you'll be able to see on Sportsnet. So to get back to your question, there was a pretty long list of guys, but I think the two that really stuck out to me would be Broberg and Seider.
You know, where are you now with Raphaël Lavoie? Because he had an up and down regular season. Like, he was still scoring, still producing a lot, but I know the one thing you mentioned throughout the season is that his effort level might not be 100% all the time, but he goes on to have an excellent postseason run, 20 goals in 23 games in the postseason like that for the Mooseheads. This is a guy who's maybe turning it on at just the right time?
Yeah, no doubt. And I really have grown fond of Raphaël Lavoie. He's about as matter-of-fact a young man as I can remember dealing with over the last few years. You ask him a question, he answers it directly to the point. He's not very verbose about it, but he does answer your questions. And, you know, with the exposure to him in Halifax at the Memorial Cup, having been in Halifax in both February and March, and, you know, having watched him last year, he's a guy that I've become really, really familiar with. And I love the fact that he was able to turn it on, show some bite in his game, show some passion, show some consistency. You know, but I think those questions in the grand scheme of things still arise when it comes to scouts. And the one thing you remember about him with being a late birthday, everyone's had that additional year to pick him apart. And for a player like Lavoie, it's probably not beneficial in his case. For guys like John Tavares, you know, late birthday, we had heard some of those things. Oh, his skating might not be good enough and whatever else. And obviously it turned out pretty good for him. I think obviously he and Lavoie are different players, but Lavoie having that extra year of scrutiny may indeed hurt him. He's probably the guy that I'm going to have. He and Arthur Kaliev are the two guys I'm going to have toughest trying to find a place for them in my top 31 in the mock draft. It's just, you know, you talk to guys. I don't know if his interviews really stuck out. I don't know if he hit any home runs in the interviews for both of those players. And I think the interview process for both of those guys was extremely important to kind of get them over the hump, to try and get scouts into the back of their minds to see what they were thinking, to see how they process things away from the game. And I don't know that either one of them hit a home run in that regard. So that they're going to be the two most fascinating guys for me to watch here come Friday night.
We're talking to Sam Constantino from Sportsnet.ca here on Sportsnet 650 with Sat and John. And Cole Caulfield is somebody, Sam, that we've talked about quite a bit. And he measured in at the combine over 5'7", or just at 5'7", which for a player like him, it may seem like, you know, we're just quibbling over 1 inch here or there. But when you combine how well he played this year, he comes in at 5'7", not 5'6", and impresses in interviews. Is there a chance that Cole Caulfield puts himself into the top 10 here?
No doubt. No doubt in my mind. And you know, we obviously have the Alex DeBrincat thing to fall back on. Mm-hmm. But you have to really watch Cole play to understand just how good he is at finding spaces to get open. You know, he's got that goal scorer's knack. It's not always the prettiest, but his thought process is about goal scoring. And it's funny, he took us through a goal he scored on the 16th of March in the back-to-back games against Green Bay. The night before, they put up a 12 spot, of course. He and Jack Hughes broke the record in the same goal, which is the 12th goal that night. They come back the next night. They're playing Green Bay again. And he ends up essentially scoring from behind the goal line. And I asked him on two occasions in our interview, just walk me through that. Like, what are you thinking here? And he said, well, here's what happened. Guys were on a line change. Marshall Warren was down there. He gave me the puck. I kind of backed up into an area that was safe because I was waiting for the line change to occur. I looked, I said, you know what, why don't I shoot this puck? And he rifled it basically off of the back of the goalie and ended up picking the top corner off the rebound. And it's not something that you see, but the thought process for a goal scorer, I think, is a little bit different than it is for the average bear. And that kind of brought us back, you know, into the back of his mind just to get a feel for what he was all about. So again, another one of those super impressive young men, always a smile on his face. He's a guy that, no doubt, if you had any concerns about him and you sat him down for 5 minutes, if you're an NHL team, you would have said, you know what? Not only do we love the million goals you've scored the last 2 years, but you're a winner, mm-hmm. and you're going to make it work, and you're going to find and fight through whatever it is to get you to the next level. So he's a guy, I think, who really, really scored big over those couple of days in Buffalo.
Well, it's interesting because him and Arthur Kaliev, completely different players, different size, but they're both very prolific goal scorers. And generally, if you score at that rate, you get drafted a lot higher than maybe we anticipated both of those guys going. And generally speaking, the 10th overall pick hasn't exactly been one full of success for any team in NHL history in the past. There's a few, obviously, like especially Mikko Rantanen being incredible at number 10. But in this year's draft, we keep talking about guys that could go in number 10. Like I have like 16 guys, 17 guys, Sam, we look at and say, yeah, this guy could be a top 10 pick. What does that mean for a team like Vancouver, the level of talent they might get on number 10 if we see some unexpected picks go ahead of them?
Well, I think they're really going to have their pick of a lot. And I don't know if my list is quite as long as 16 or 17, but I do believe there are probably as many as 8 names that are going to be available to the Canucks there. And so I think because, you know, and I had a good chat with Brian Burke about this, and he said, listen, I'm telling you guys, teams don't pick by position. Now, we have had some teams that have gone by the wayside in terms of that thinking, but him, with all of his experience and all the teams that he's been with, he said they don't pick by position unless, and the caveat was, unless you have two players that are really ranked similarly that you don't feel strongly one way or the other about, then you would draft based on position and you'd start with center and then you'd go to your defense or defense and center, depending exactly on what that general manager thinks. So I think that's really going to be the situation that Vancouver finds itself in at number 10. They're going to be sitting there and you're probably going to find the likes of a, you know, Broberg, Soderstrom, York type guy available. And also, there might be an opportunity where a Doc Cousins, Krebs, Caulfield is available. You know, just off the top of my head, six or seven names right there that I think, because of the way the top of the board is going to go, is going to make things really interesting. And again, the big wild card, who I just have no idea where he's going to go, but I do believe he's a top five talent in this draft, is Vasily Podkolzin. Mm-hmm. If he goes inside a 10, then that's going to push some other guys back down into the 10 range where Vancouver's picking. So he'll be a really interesting guy to watch, because the contractual situation won't allow him to come over here for a couple of years on a team that's very rich in resources in Scott, St. Petersburg. So he'll be a fascinating guy to watch, in and only in the fact that if he goes inside a 10, he's going to bump someone down into Vancouver's territory.
And Sam, is there a player, like last season we saw Ty Dellandrea go a bit higher than expected, goes 13th overall, great character, obviously, and he was young for the draft, born in July 21st. Do you see some similarities with Philip Tomasino and maybe him going a bit higher than expected?
Yeah, I think so. I really do. I know Philip quite well. I've known his dad since we were, since basically I started going to school. So I know Manny as a blue-collar guy who raised his son the right way. And then you look at the on-ice product and you're thinking, wow, this guy's got great speed, right wing. He ends up getting an opportunity, not in the Hlinka, which kind of ticked him off and motivated him to have a really good year in Niagara, but also as a guy who went to the April tournament in Sweden and performed really well there in a limited time. He was late showing up because Niagara had got into the second round. So he's going to be a fascinating guy for me that I probably would have said before the combine was on, 20 and beyond, and now I'd say he's probably 20 and above.
We don't often see goaltenders go in the first round anymore, but Spencer Knight is one player that's been on your first round rankings the entire season. Is there a way you see that maybe he can get into the top 10 conversation, or is that asking too much of that position now?
Ooh, I think that's a difficult one, because, I think about the teams that might have to address that area. And again, you're not probably thinking about this guy coming and playing for you for at least five more years. Mm-hmm. So that becomes a challenge in and of itself. If you're the Rangers, you're probably not going that way, because you have a couple of guys that you think are going to succeed Lundqvist at some point down the road. Maybe two guys that might be ready, when Lundqvist is eventually done there. I look at Chicago, and I think that's a little bit too aggressive for where they are at number three, maybe with a ladder pick because they have multiples in the first round. I look at Colorado, same thing, a little aggressive for me at number four. So now you're getting into the 5, 6, 7, 8 range. Does Detroit, is that an area they need to address? Potentially, I suppose. But again, I just don't see it inside the top 10. I don't know. I can't see it happening. But then again, with this draft class, it really wouldn't surprise me based on how jumbled it gets after the first two guys.
When you look at Podkolzin, sorry, you quickly mentioned, we got about a minute here, Sam. Podkolzin and Detroit's history of successfully drafting Russian players, being patient with some of their prospects, Yzerman and his track record again with successful Russian picks in Tampa, is that maybe a perfect fit for where Podkolzin could eventually land?
Well, I think that's a real possibility. And I think at six, they felt like they got a lot lucky with Filip Zadina. Now, he hasn't had quite the trajectory of some of those picks ahead of him, but I do think he's a guy that's going to score at the next level, maybe as early as next year. So Podkolzin may very well fit that. And I think with his all-around game, and again, the history that you mentioned with Detroit as an organization, with Steve Yzerman in Tampa, that's a real possibility for me there at six.
He is Sam Constantino, courtesy of Sportsnet. Check out his latest article, The 10 Takeaways from the NHL Combine. We're only a few weeks away, Sam, from you coming back to Vancouver for the draft. We look forward to that, but we will chat with you ahead of that time as well. Appreciate it very much, Sam.
Okay, Satjohn, thanks, guys. Take care.
Thanks,
you
Sam.
As well. That's Sam Constantino, always full of insight after the NHL draft.
Sportsnet 650.